Welcome to Let's Chat. I'm Grace Frank, and today I have two amazing guests. We first have Trey Mecklen with Evernest Property Management and Sean Steiger from RSS Insurance. So we're going to talk about property management and insuring your properties. And so we're going to start with Trey.
Good morning, everybody.
How you doing, Trey?
Good. How are you, Grace?
Great. So what is the biggest complaint you hear in long-term management in the industry?
When I'm getting business generally from other companies, the first thing I hear is they don't pick up the phone.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how many doors you have, one or seven. They sign on, they have a wonderful 2-3 week experience, and then nobody ever picks up again.
Right.
PMs, they're dealing with a lot of homes. They're sending people out in the field nonstop. Sadly, one of the things that suffers is communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that a lot from investors. I've actually had investors that have tried for a month to even get a hold of a property management company to try to get their business, and they didn't even answer their phone. So, you know, if they don't even answer their sales calls, it's like, how are they ever going to answer, you know, a tenant call? It's just always really amazing to me.
It is. You'll have savvy owners test the system by calling leasing.
Right.
Or calling various departments to get tests, not just sales, because sales is most likely to pick up the phone. Everybody wants new business.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, we hope. We hope. But calling leasing, calling tenant services, they want to know their tenants are going to be taken care of.
Exactly.
All of those lines need to be covered.
Yeah, that's a really key part. So why should people use a property management company? Why not just self-manage?
Well, those who've already self-managed probably can answer that question right now. They're all probably screaming it in unison at the listening system they're using. But long story short, all the things that you deal with as a landlord, 230 calls about leaks, troublesome tenants, changes in city codes, things that affect your income to a great degree. All of those things can be handled remotely and free up your time for other things. Everybody wants their property to be a revenue generator.
Mm-hmm.
But what people don't understand, that can often become a 25-hour a week job. If you have work going on at the property, you're having to follow up with vendors. You're having to follow up with a troublesome tenant if they're causing you issues on their end. Having all of that taken off of your plate for a small slice of the profit in exchange can often be a very freeing experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of clients that did a lot of self-management when they had like one or two, properties. And as they grew, it was too overwhelming for them. I think that property management is really, really key, particularly as you're trying to grow your portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So can I sell a home with a resident in it?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Investors do it all the time. It is a different kind of sale, and of course your tenant needs to be aware of what's going on,
right,
ideally. But yeah, investors pick up and trade off and sell homes that are currently occupied all the time. The only time you run into issues is if those two things cross into conflict with one another in the process of trying to fill the home itself.
Right.
But yeah, investors wouldn't make a dime if they couldn't sell a home with an occupant in it.
Yeah.
Very, very common thing in the U.S.
And right now it's an interesting time in real estate because there's been an amazing amount of appreciation. So in the last 6 months, have you seen the market kind of shift a little bit in terms of time frame it needs to get a tenant in place compared to where it was a year ago? I'm just kind of curious about that.
Well, it really depends on the market you're talking about across the Southeast. Things are different in Orlando than they are in Atlanta, for instance. Orlando has not seen a lot of new growth as far as availability of places to live for all the tenants, and yet it continues to see people move down there for service industry, for vacation industry, and for tech and health industries. So down there, inventory is not matching need. Chattanooga, we continue to pile on new builds everywhere.
Uh-huh.
We continue to make new places for people to live. Unfortunately, at the same time, the market's stagnating to such a degree that a lot of the homeowners that have been sitting on market for a long time, they've been since 60 days on market with no movement to sell.
Wow.
And now they're wanting to move over to a rental model.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually creating a little bit of a glut of inventory in certain months in Chattanooga, depending on what's going on. Yeah.
Is there a particular price point that you're seeing that moves faster than another price point?
Yeah, it gets harder to fill once you get into the luxury home sections, really.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Chattanooga is still an easy place to fill if you're a working class individual looking for someone remotely affordable,
right,
close to downtown area, Hickson, Red Bank, East Chattanooga. still very, very hard to keep homes empty there.
Okay.
If you're starting to rent on the outskirts and it's a larger mansion, you built someplace mm-hmm. out in Ottawa, you don't want to be there anymore, it can be a little bit trickier to fill. We're still doing it nonstop, mm-hmm. but that's becoming a more common rental in Chattanooga, and it's a very, very different client okay. than a local renter.
Right. So their house has been sitting on the market for a listing, they are moving, or, you know, they, and so they're trying to minimize the cash flow.
They're paying
issue.
Mortgage every month and yeah. just sitting there. Yeah. yeah. Why not turn it into a revenue generator yeah. in the meantime?
Well, that's a very interesting thing, you know, and the whole short-term rental market also has been kind of a challenge with what's going on with city codes and everything. So what is your biggest challenge right now with investors?
My biggest challenge with investors, honestly, it's waiting for the market to change. Everybody's waiting to start buying again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not happening. Everything's just sitting there. It's interesting because it's not having the impact. It's not devastating the rental industry. That's always a thing. There's right. always a need for someplace to live. But what's happening in real estate is every week we used to get a call from somebody picking up 4 or 5 doors
mm-hmm.
a couple of years ago when things were moving. Now everybody's waiting, just waiting, waiting.
Well,
waiting.
The interest rates have really kind of, you know, if somebody's not paying cash or doing a 1031 exchange, you know, the interest rates have really made it more challenging for things to cash flow. You know, because the interest rates for an investor are over 8% right now.
Yeah, nobody
general.
Wants to give up that old rate.
You know,
nobody.
That's a really different rate than what it was 2 years ago.
Mm. So that's affecting a lot of the accidental landlords too, these mom and pops who mm-hmm. never really thought they'd be a landlord.
Right.
And then they're looking at a sell and they're looking at their original rate that they're paying their mortgage off and they're like, no way can I give up what I have here.
Yeah.
It's continuing to appreciate every year the way a 401k would.
Right.
Why get rid of it in this market?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, that's why there's a lot of more new construction going on. So a really quick question before we kind of go over to Sean a little bit. Do you see that renters prefer a single family, a townhome? Where are you seeing that there is a better, you know, conversion of keeping those occupied?
Chattanooga has two kinds of renters. We have a lot of people coming in from out of state.
Mm-hmm.
They're generally a different income class. A lot of them are buying without even really visiting that long. And then we have longtime Chattanoogans or Tennesseans who are moving to try to stay relatively close to the area that they're working and still find something affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Those, I'd say the most popular and most easily filled rental are those homes. They're going to be townhomes. They're going to be multifam, smaller single family homes. Those are really, really easy to fill in Chattanooga right now, especially with working class folks looking for a way to be near their job.
Is there a price point that's the best?
I mean, everybody wants to know what's the lowest I can get. I literally saw on a message board the other day, I'm looking for a 2-bedroom for around $800 in the Chattanooga area.
That's tough to get.
That is tough to get. You'd have to be way out to find something like that. But I mean, you're probably looking at around $14. If you're looking for a decent 2-bedroom, it's mm-hmm. going to be between $12 and $14 in the Chattanooga area. I mean, what are you looking for?
Right.
You can find a older, beat down home and probably get a better deal depending on what you're willing to look at. But if you're looking at a lot of rehabs in this area, yeah, even in what we would consider the more affordable areas now, it's getting 12s and above.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think about this new ordinance that's coming into effect in terms of changing the square footage needs of the lot size per property? You think that's going to have a good impact?
On rentals uh-huh. or on new builds?
Well, I mean, rentals or new builds, a lot of times people are building new construction as rentals.
You know what? Honestly, I don't have an educated answer. I'd be eager to see how it does impact things.
Okay. All right. Well, Sean, Trey and I have worked a lot with Sean as well. Sean is our expert on insurance. He does both commercial and residential.
I do.
He's actually helped my investors on both sides of
I
the
have.
Equation.
Thank you.
That's great for them because sometimes they have, you know, a multifamily as well as single family. And so what are the key differences between insuring long-term rental properties and short-term rental properties, Sean?
Great question. I think probably the primary difference is the tenants that they're going to have, of course. So when you've got long-term properties, long-term rental properties, you're talking about someone that you've background checked and, you know, you've checked references mm-hmm. on, we hope. And
yeah.
so, you know, and then they can also have a track record, you know, of, you know, hey, you You know, they're at the last place for 3 or 4 years. With short term, that gets really dicey. You know, yeah. it gets because especially when it's a listing that's being pushed out, you know, all over the place. These people can easily sign up on Vrbo or Airbnb and get into a place and rent a place. Mm-hmm. And so just by that nature, you can't screen the tenants as much. And so that just leads to a lot more claims, a lot more risk. And in terms of insurance has had to really figure out how to respond to this. And so when short-term rentals really started taking off, insurance companies weren't really prepared for that. And so what you have is two different types of insurance policies, a commercial policy and a residential policy. And they didn't know what to do except to add endorsements or to change this or change that. Mm-hmm. And just in this last year specifically, there's been a lot of changes on how and what is the best way to insure things. And so people that have long-term rentals, they've seen some changes, but especially on the short-term rental side, the insurance industry is just, it seems like finally figuring out kind of some best practices, and a lot of companies that were trying is like, that was too much risk. And they're pulling out on the more, residential type policy home mm-hmm. front or on the personal policy home front. So yeah, there's been quite a bit of changes on how to insure.
Yeah. I mean, I know that we've kind of handled and worked through that with you through our farm, which we do, you know, we have some short-term rental there, and a lot of, you know, people who have acreage are doing more short-term rentals because they're close to, you know, hiking and things like that, and it's a great environment, and it helps bring more cash flow to the property, mm-hmm. but it has become a little bit more of a challenge with the insurance basis.
Yeah, it's getting more expensive.
Yeah,
as well. But there's more benefits and more specific coverages offered by mm-hmm. you know, and there's specialty companies out there now that do a really good job of writing a policy just for that. But when you are getting that specific and you've got something that designed, it also does mm-hmm. come at a cost as well.
So, do you see what rate do you think it's increasing by?
In terms of percentages, I would have to compare, let's say I was going to insure your property before all these changes, like 3 years ago, mm-hmm. I probably would have put you on a personal policy first. That
right.
From a cost aspect, the pricing is easier on a personal side of policy, and the policies are quite different when you actually read the policy languages and how they respond. And so now your better coverage, and it's easier to find on a commercial paper or commercial policy. Those differences on the average can be anywhere from 20 to 40% more expensive.
Which is really digs into your cash flow.
Right, right.
Big and time.
Yeah, it can. It can dig into your cash flow. Yeah. And so that being said, though, it can be very relative. So I've got an example of a friend of mine that I've watched him over the last 10 years really build a portfolio, mm-hmm. And he ended up selling most of them and kind of putting all that money into developing a street, and that mm-hmm. street's going to be full of short-term rentals. Okay. Mm-hmm. His very first one, you know, he got, and there's like 6 units in it. And so that by nature needs to be anything over 5 units or more has to be a commercial policy
right.
anyways. All that being said, I was giving him my quote, which was my best recommendation. He's got $1 million invested in this. Okay. Very little lending. Okay.
That's and a lot of cash.
That's a lot of cash, right? That's a whole bunch. He's got $1 million invested in this whole development, but the property specifically is probably 700 and some odd thousand of that, mm-hmm. right? It's going to, his cash flow is going to be amazing on 6 units. Okay. Really good cash flow. I lost the bid to him, going to a competitor for the tune of about $40 a month. Mm. Okay. On insurance cost. $40 uh-huh. a month on insurance costs. And he has a lot out there, you know, to insure, you know, but when I broke it down for him, he just made the cost, he made it a cost equation. Now, here's what he didn't get for that $40 a month. You know, the policy I had offered him included bed bug and flea extermination, which is a huge risk.
Oh,
yeah.
A huge risk and very expensive.
Yeah.
And he himself actually went through a prior property with this claim. And so that confused me. Squatter, you can get, like, for example, in the policy I offered, squatter and eviction expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's not a normal coverage, you know.
Well, he's going to pay a lot more than that just for one.
Right.
Or they're going to be paying a property management company
right.
an optional fee to have that same coverage. You, probably not at the same rate.
You are correct. And then just the ease of a claim mm-hmm. for this policy, for example, this policy expects for there to be claims for theft and damage caused by a guest because those risks are higher with a short-term rental.
Oh, they are,
you know,
yeah.
Vandalism is very much a problem. And then you've got the other factor that the policy that he went with has a vacancy exclusion. And so if that property is sat vacant for longer than a certain period of time, there's going to be problems with claims made against, you know, like a heating and cooling unit being stolen. Or like we had a friend, right, that their copper pipes were stolen, mm-hmm. you know, out right. from under the house, right?
Yeah.
So the policy I was offering him doesn't exclude vacancy type stuff. So if it's vacant or unoccupied, you know, for an extended period, and then the loss of income side of it too. So let's say you have a tree in the middle of this $700,000 house.
Right.
You can't rent six units and you've got it booked for how many months with deposits and all that. So there are limits on the policy that he purchased, mm-hmm. like how much would be covered and time limits too. The policy I offered didn't have time limits, didn't have dollar limits. It was like, hey, show us your commitments and it's covered. And so you're getting a lot, you know, the expenses more, but the coverage, like I said, is there. And so really, you know, for the difference of price.
Right.
$480 a year. You gave up all that.
Right. Exactly.
That's crazy.
Exactly. And so what...
One attorney's bill is a lot more than that.
Right?
exactly.
One eviction's going to cost more than
that. Well, and talk about this, okay? So let's say you've got an Airbnb and you don't allow pets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. People bring their pets, if you don't allow them.
No, they do.
They just do. With the best of intentions.
Right.
You know, let's say they had a dog sitter lined up and they, you know, they're sick.
They'll never even notice Fluffy was in here. We'll clean
exactly.
up when we're done.
Exactly. Yeah. Not a big deal. But the moment that there's a problem, and here's a very normal claim, a DoorDasher. It comes up. This is a home that maybe it has a fenced in yard with a gate, but it doesn't have a beware a dog sign because why would you need it at a place that you don't allow pets, right? That's an actual claim that has happened, you know,
wow.
at an Airbnb is, you know, they brought Fluffy along, which hopefully it's not the three-headed Fluffy from Harry Potter, but.
Oh, well, you know. So how does the claim process differ between long-term and short-term rental properties? What can property owners do to prepare for potential claims?
Yeah, so there are several ways to manage your own risk. You can mitigate risk by, of course, avoidance.
It's right.
one a great, great way. And so a good common practice for avoiding a potential claim is when a property is booked through a portal, Vrbo mm-hmm. or an Airbnb, there is a very small window of time that you could actually be like bow out, you know? And so you might want to just in that initial engagement, do some pre-qualifying things, you know,
mm-hmm.
be 100% clear on, hey, no dogs allowed, you know,
right.
Which by the way, the other policy that I can write can allow for people to bring their dogs under certain weights. And so that's another good option too, because there are a lot of, we travel with dogs. We need that for our Airbnbs.
Right.
Anyways, but on the claims process side, just the less that could be stolen, the mm-hmm. better. And so just be mindful of what's in that unit.
Right.
You know, in this might not sound as important to your normal Vrbo, but I've got a friend of mine in Chickamauga, Georgia, that we like to go to her themed Vrbos. And so we stared at her Lord of the Rings suite, and she's got like armor suits in there And yeah, it's I've pretty
seen
cool.
pictures. It's pretty
it's,
groovy.
It's yeah. pretty cool. Yeah. It's pretty cool. But there's some expensive stuff in there that, you know, you would want to, you know, that could get stolen.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so what she did was, is the way that she displayed them made it really hard for them to just
walk away.
Walk away.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a really nice Berkey water filter in one of our short-term rentals, and it walked.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Things long-term property managers rarely have to deal with, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So you know, mitigating something like that, the really good thing is if you know what those items could be, mm-hmm. you know, then go ahead and have that as part of your check sheet to where, okay, someone's left, your cleaning person's coming in, mm-hmm. you know, make sure that those are accounted for.
Yeah.
Because when's the quickest time is to call that person up and be like, hey, just so you know, person in front of you, this was there.
Right.
Just curious, have you seen it?
Right.
You know, it's awkward conversation, but it could save a claim, because theft claims, they you have enough of them. That's, you know, any amount of the right or wrong claim is going to mm-hmm. raise your
rates. Think one of the challenges that we've seen in our short-term rentals is that somebody, you know, does the short-term rental, but then there's a guest or a friend that shows up. Visit
a party
them.
Hosted.
Yeah.
So, got a story for this. Yeah.
You know, or the boyfriend that shows up. And so it's like, you know, and you don't have everybody really vetted, you know?
Yeah.
So that is a challenge.
And that's the other risk factor. So I got asked to quote a place in Sevierville, a $2 million home. Mm-hmm. It could take on 8 people. There are 8 bedrooms. There's a separate pool house. Okay. And then above the pool, like it's a pool house, above the pool is a deck, a second story deck. And I looked at the policy that they're covered with currently and started reading the policy, which you need a good agent that can read a policy, by the way, because when I read the policy, the pool building was excluded.
Yeah. And that's the biggest liability there is.
Okay. And then on the umbrella over the policy, there was an exclusion for pools on the umbrella. And so if anything happened to that other house or that the pool was in, mm-hmm. or a claim happened because of the pool, which, you know, but think of this place, and I'll circle this back to what you had said, other people coming.
Yeah.
What kind of people are you going to be renting this to? You're going to be renting this out for weddings.
Parties.
You're going to be renting it out to sorority houses.
Things where a lot of alcohol.
You know? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So through the roof. Now the price difference on that front between, you know, what I offered and they had offered was a few thousand dollars. But again,
this is multiple opportunities for horror to happen.
And so I call them once a quarter. I'm like, hey, you ready? Because I'm still worried about you.
That's a really good point. I mean, you know, and I think Trey, you probably see this a lot in, you know, longer term property management, where there's investors that have like 5, 10, 12 properties. Can they get a better rate with the more properties they have through you? Or not really?
It can happen, but uh-huh. not often.
And how does it play into where those properties are located? So I know you don't go into Florida much, but we're all over the U.S.
Right.
So how does that contribute to the cost of their covering multiple homes all across the nation?
Yeah. So when it comes to that, the properties will need to be insured by paper that is within that state. And so if you have, you know, properties across multiple states, it's often best to have, like, this is my policy for Tennessee, this is my policy for Georgia, this, you know, so on and so forth. There are ways to insure across multiple places, and that just takes it a different direction, because those to quote and to bind that coverage involves a lot of us advocating with underwriters and explaining entire situations and experience of the owners.
Well, you did that with one of my investors recently.
I did. Yeah. Absolutely.
She had multifamily up east, northeast.
Correct.
As well as moving here and starting their, you know, moved here personally and then also started their property management adventures here as well.
Right. And so there was a lot involved there. And so when I looked at that case specifically, I got her actual policies for, I think it was Massachusetts, and read through them and was able to, A, learn more about Massachusetts. Don't have a lot of clients there right now. But anyways, yeah, it was very specific to that state, you know, and each state kind of governs that. So you need a company. So I can place... To answer your questions, I can place coverage, you know, like one policy for multiple states, but it's going to be a company that understands those multiple states really well, of course, and an underwriter specifically signing off on each location. And
well, what's great about our conversation to do today, both with Trey and Sean, is that they can do different tasks in different states. Evernest is around the country. Sean can write both residential and commercial. In most states.
About 40 states. Yeah, primarily the Southeast is where, because we are locally owned here in Chattanooga, so we're heavy in the Southeast and have more options in the Southeast, but we do have clients, you know, everywhere.
That's great. Well, if you had to tell an investor today one bit of advice, you know, free advice from Sean, what would that be?
This will put a good tail on the end of the last question regarding claims. Keep meticulous records, especially if you're a short-term rental person. You need check sheets, you need guidelines, you need, you know, you probably need some processes like our friend Donna at iTrip can offer.
Yeah. You know? We'll have Donna back. She was going to be here today and was ill, but, you know, they do our short-term rentals, and they have some great checklists.
They've got a good system for that, and so that would be my advice if you're going to do short-term is really understand how to mitigate risk by good check sheets and good records and good pre-qualifications for you know good rules like putting limits on you know how many guests you can have or having a guest inventory like hey who RSVP'd and you know get you know, whatever can be required and not run someone off is a good idea. But other things that I would say pitfalls to avoid would just, like I was saying with policy language, don't just make your decision based off of price.
I agree.
In insurance, yes, it can cut into your profit on the regular expense of operations. But don't be so short-sighted that extra $40, $50 a month, what are you risking? It only takes one claim, you know, and not that big of a one. So to mess up profit.
If I could play into that, we have the same thing. People want to nickel and dime very much in property management. Yeah. They're very much worried about that bottom line after they pay your fees.
Right.
It's exactly, and I think insurance is the same. You're in your 40s and you're buying a new pair of shoes or a new bed mattress. You're going to get exactly what you pay for. So if you're really worried about that 40 bucks a month, you're talking about, you're walking miles in these shoes. It's going to matter in that 12th month. It's going to matter down the line.
It is. And the other side note to keep in mind, too, is especially if you're getting a loan on these properties, and we've got some great lenders that we work with in Chattanooga, right? A lot of good friends of mine are lenders. What none of them, they are all in competition with each other. And insurance is a line item on what they're offering when they're escrowing for the purchase of these properties.
Right.
You know? And so most of them have not caught up to current insurance prices. And so just be mindful that when you are buying a property and you're financing it as well, to get the actual cost from your insurance agent and don't look sideways at your lender, that's not their field. They're going to put $100 a month as a guesstimate.
Right.
Because that's what they've done for 20 years and their competitor isn't going to put $200 a month because it's going to look like they're not competitive.
Right.
So, you know, just kind of do your own due diligence, you know, and make sure your agent understands the difference in coverage and can actually read a policy.
Well, Trey, any last words of wisdom for investors?
Sean hit a big one with if it's coming down to nickels and dimes with you, you may need to step back and take a look at what you're after because really the product you're purchasing is so important down the line. But if anything, I would say to people who are considering property management, it's the biggest, and I think I've said this to you folks before, is the most expensive repair you're ever going to have on your home is a bad tenant in the end.
Oh, yeah.
You cannot stress enough the importance, if you're going to decide to self-manage, the links you need to go to delve into the background income, make sure the person you're paying has an intent to treat it like the home were their own. Mm-hmm. There is just nothing more ruinous than a good tenant becoming a bad tenant and refusing to leave. It can take out months and months of income. It can harm your home. It can cause damages you're never going to recoup without spending your own money.
Right.
It's just a big set of minefields. So if you're going to go the self-managing route, pour some effort into it. If you're looking for a property manager, try to look for somebody who internalizes those and make sure that they give it a serious look.
So, Trey, how do people get a hold of you?
You're going to give me a call down at Everness Property Management. You can just Google Everness down in Chattanooga. Uh-huh. You can call me on my business line, 773-663-9190, anytime. I work 24/7.
Okay. And Sean?
You can Google Sean Steiger or RSS Insurance and find me very easily. I'm at 423-593-4302. You can call or text that number. If you're a new contact, just say that in your initial text and I'll reply with my virtual contact card and I'll make it very easy for you.
Great. And it was great to have you guys today. Thank you for providing some great insight for our investors. And next time, stay tuned for Let's Chat with Grace.